I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. The Flying Troutmans is a new novel from the author Miriam Taves. It's an entertaining book about two highly exceptional children who, with their aunt, have hit the road on a trip to find their father after their mother is taken ill. Taves is the author of three previous novels, Summer of My Amazing Luck, A Boy of Good Breeding, and A Complicated Kindness, which won the Governor General's Prize and the Canada Reads Situation a couple of years ago. She's also written a work of nonfiction, Swing Low, A Life. She lives in Winnipeg, but joins me from here in Vancouver today. The Flying Troutmans is published by Knopf and retails for $32. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Miriam Taves. Good morning, Ms. Taves.
Hi there.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Do people still call you Toes?
Well, some do. Yeah, I get that a lot.
Tell me about The Flying Troutmans.
Well, it's a novel about, it's a road story, really. That's how it started. And it's a story about a family that's on the road in search of a father, actually. It's a story of two sisters. The younger sister is called back by her niece and nephew to come and take care of them because their mother is too sick and can't. And so she does return, and they decide to go on the road.
Well, what Hattie is the younger sister, mm-hmm. and she lives in Paris, and she leads a sort of artist lifestyle. Is that correct?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, she doesn't really know what she's doing. You know, she's trying to be an artist, but isn't having a lot of luck.
And what motivates her to come back? Just niece calls her, right?
Her niece Thebes, who's 11, calls her, and you know, it's an urgent situation. Thebes and Logan, her 15-year-old brother, don't know what to do, how to take care of themselves or their mother anymore. Hattie, you know, is living in Paris, not really doing much. She's just been dumped by her boyfriend, and she loves these kids, and she loves her sister, and she wants to help them. So she returns. She doesn't know exactly how to help them, but it's something that she's trying to do.
The mother of the children, her name is Min.
Mm-hmm.
What's her relationship with Hattie?
Well,
I guess you don't go into that in the book, do you? But there's some backstory there about, I remember reading that Min didn't seem happy after Hattie was born.
Right. I mean, the relationship is complicated, and like, you know, most sibling relationships are, most relationships, period. But there's a lot of love between them. They love each other and they care for each other. But Min suffers from, you know, some form of mental illness and depression, and often has bouts of periods of, you know, extreme darkness. But you know, Min and Hattie have always had a complicated relationship, but they've, in their own ways, attempted to reach out to each other.
Now, these kids, Logan and Thebes, they are exceptional, aren't they?
They're exceptional in that they're dealing with, on the one hand, exceptional circumstances. On the other hand, something that's very, very common. And they don't, you know, they feel be tough in certain ways, and yet, you know, they're very typical in that they're also very sensitive and vulnerable and a little bit lost.
Now, Logan, he seems to be. I don't know. I can't. When I was this weekend, I was looking you up on Google, and I came across a program you did on This American Life,
mm-hmm.
and I thought of your son for some reason.
Yeah.
Is there a similarity there?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, the circumstances are different. It's fiction. It's, you know, the characters are all composites, but. But yeah, absolutely.
I guess all 15-year-old boys are like that, aren't they?
Well, I think there's. I mean, yeah. That. I mean, you know, my son isn't 15 anymore. He's older. But certainly that age, 15. I mean, it's a rich age in terms of the stuff that 15-year-olds are going through, and you know, the conflict and not knowing who they are and wanting, you know, and or what they want to be or how they want to present themselves in the world. And it's also an age, I think, when a lot of boys tend to kind of stop talking a lot about how they're feeling, because, you know, for whatever reasons, and sort of that passes. But it's an interesting age.
Well, when I said exceptional, I guess Thebes is exceptional in the sense that at 11, mm-hmm. I wasn't writing lyrics and emailing them to David Geffen.
Right. Well, you know, she's neither was I.
Or reading the dictionary out loud.
I think that's something that's pretty, I think a lot of people are interested in the dictionary. I know I tend to flip through it just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
Fun reading.
Now they go on a trip. Now you happen to like road trips, do you not?
Yeah, I love road trips.
When was the last time you were on the road? Did you, actually, when you came from Winnipeg to here, I guess you took a plane, right?
Yeah, I've been flying around on the book tour. But, I did drive from Montreal to Toronto just recently, which was a lot of fun.
And you take your kids along, or do you just...
Older now, they're all adults, so, we haven't been on a road trip together as a family in quite a long time.
So I read a couple of articles that have compared the book to Little Miss Sunshine. Did you think the comparison's apt?
That's kind of an easy comparison, and I mean, they're both, Little Miss Sunshine is a road movie, and my book is a road story, and there are families, and there's dysfunction, and and they're on the road, and sort of on a mission. So yeah, there are similarities, but yeah.
Deborah Solomon. In the New York Times, she comes into the story. What's Logan's relationship with her?
Logan really admires Deborah Solomon and sort of has this 15-year-old crush on her, and Thebes, of course, makes fun of him and teases him about it. But, he admires Deborah Solomon. He thinks she's solid in his words and doesn't back away from things. And so, what I'm trying to get across is that she inspires him.
She's that woman in the Times magazine that interviews people, right?
Yeah. She is really good. I'm a big fan too.
How do you react when people try to categorize your book either as a happy one or a sad one? I mean, from what I've read of it, it's neither.
Right.
It's actually both, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say absolutely it's both. Like, I'm just trying to represent. This is just a little, just a little world, a little corner of life that my characters are living, and that's how I see life in the world. It's a happy, sad place, or tragic, comic.
Back to that program that you did on This American Life, where you recorded your son, listening to it, and I'm in my mid-20s, mm-hmm. and I still remember being that age,
yeah.
And I sort of wonder. First of all, it was uncomfortable to listen to. You sort of listen to it as if you're watching a car wreck. You sort of mm-hmm. close one eye, but I guess you close one ear, I suppose, when you're listening to it. Mm-hmm. Why did you do that? Why did you record your son and ask him about? It wasn't personal things as a guy. If my mom did that, I probably would probably. not have sat in the room with her, I guess.
I asked him if he wanted to do it, and he said, sure. We have a close relationship where we can, talk in our own ways about stuff, and it wasn't a big deal. He's used to, that's what I do, where I write stories and, talk to people, and so it was. There was a level of discomfort for sure, because he was 15 at the time, and,
You were asking about girls and his feelings and the sort of thing, right?
Yeah, how he felt about girls. But his answer was always pretty much the same, which was, I don't know.
But you got a sense of what he felt, didn't you?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The pauses and the silences.
You found that was if you communicated the same way, you probably got he got an insight into how you felt. Is that correct?
My son got an insight into how I felt.
Yeah, you were talking on the program. You were talking about watching television and just sitting there and sighing, and you sort of made a connection there.
Yeah, and it was exactly. It was one of those moments where he sort of wordlessly reached out and was very affectionate and loving. And those types of moments happen all the time between. They should anyway, between parents and kids, and they're always, but you never know when they're going to, especially with teenagers, you never know when they're going to happen, and you can't force them, and you can't, they just happen.
He's older now. Does he appreciate that probably more now than he did then?
Appreciate those moments? Or?
Yeah, well, no, appreciate you talking about himself.
Oh, yeah, it was a long time. I don't think he thinks about it that much, but,
It's something that we grow out of, is it?
Yeah, you mean about him talking about himself?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's not 15 anymore. You know, he's a very sociable, you know, talkative guy who's far more, as like, you know, most 21-year-olds, more in touch with his feelings and understanding.
Another program that you did on This American Life were letters that you wrote to that you'd written. Was that true? That I mean, that you were writing to your son's father?
Yeah, absolutely, to his biological father. Yeah.
And did you ever? Did they ever get to him?
I have no idea.
But there was one letter where the father of the father came into your life again.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he did. Yeah, and I met him and talked to him.
When I have writers on, we have writers of fiction and nonfiction and sort of, and they talk about these sorts of things about their lives. I'm not the sort of person that talks about his life.
Mm-hmm.
Is it hard for you, or do you find it easy almost?
To talk about my own life?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what else. I mean, you know, I don't particularly enjoy talking about myself. I mean, you know, when I'm touring a book or promoting a book, it's kind of, you know, necessary. It's part of the deal. But there are things, a million things, just about anything I'd rather talk about than myself.
Do you find though that people connect to it, or that find something in your life that they can relate to?
I hope so. I mean, I guess that's what I hope, like, all writers do. That our writing, that the stories that we write are going to resonate with people, that, you know, we're going to create characters people can relate to and feel for and connect with in a way, you know. And that's also a great thing about being on a book tour, is you get to meet readers and it's a nice connection.
And you enjoy the feedback that you get from readers?
Sometimes, you know, for the most part, I do, yeah.
Well, one reviewer, I guess it's the reviewer in the Ottawa Citizen, said he'd like to have a sequel to this book. Is that something you've thought about already?
A sequel to The Flying Troutman?
Yeah.
No, certainly not. I have no intention of writing a sequel. But, I mean, things, no, it's not my plan.
Do you write all the time? Like in on the tour now, do you find that you write, or is it just tour work?
It's mostly just tour work, and I find I can't really focus. I take notes all the time. If I have little ideas, you know, I have a notebook with me all the time, so I'll jot some things down. But no, actually, you know, writing, no.
And
like, there's no time.
And are you working on, like, I mean, is there a project that you put on hold because of the tour right now?
No. You know, when this is over, I'll go back and I'll start work on another novel. But, you know, in the meantime, I'll do this. And like I say, I just take little notes and hope that they become something bigger.
This next novel, do you come up with the plot first or the characters first?
I'm trying to think. It's usually characters, you know. I don't think about plot that much. I think about characters that I want to write about, characters that I care about, stuff that they're going through that I care about, that I'm interested in, and the plot, or, you know, or whatever there is of the plot will develop from that.
I mean, reading The Flying Troutmans, it seems that the characters got fleshed out long before you started writing. Is that a mm-hmm. correct observation?
I think so, yeah. You know, like I say, I always start with the characters, and they have to be strong, clear, like, and fleshed out, like you say, in my mind before I can begin to write.
In The Flying Troutmans, do you see yourself in any of the characters?
I probably see myself in all of them in some ways, and then not at all in other ways. You know, certainly, I mean, just Hattie is an aunt to these kids, but, you know, and I'm a mother to my own kids, but I know that, and I think any parent, you know, that kind of that feeling of loving, you know, your kids or whoever it is in your life that you love, and wanting to be there for them, wanting to take care of them, wanting to help them, and maybe not always knowing exactly how to do it, you know, or what the best way is.
You mentioned that you keep a notebook. Do you write longhand, or do you write on a computer?
Well, when I'm actually writing, I use a computer.
And I'm interested in your writing habits. Do you write, some people, you know, spend X amount of time doing it every day. Some people just do it when it comes to them. Are you pretty disciplined in that sense?
I try to be. I don't always succeed, but I try to be. Yeah, I try to write every day. You know, when I am working on a novel, it just helps with maintaining momentum and focus.
And do you spend like 8 hours doing it, 2 hours, or?
Oh yeah, maybe on a good day, maybe 4 hours.
Well, what do you think we should take away from The Flying Troutmans? I mean, it seems all families are dysfunctional. And I mean, have you ever met a functional family?
I don't think so.
No.
I think I'd be terrified if I did. I wouldn't believe it. But, you know, it's that combination. I mean, it's love and it's loss and it's conflict and it's, you know, the ambiguity, the randomness of life and the things that occur and the absurdities of life. And just, you know, I think connecting with these characters and understanding that we can't control, you know, much of anything at all.
And I asked you about your writing habits. Do you read a lot as a writer?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
And in terms of does it, I guess it does help your writing, doesn't it, to read?
Oh, for sure. I can't think of anything that would help more. No, I mean, yeah, definitely.
Do you read fiction mainly, or...?
I read both. Now I'm really into fiction because when I write, you know, when I was writing The Troutmans, when I'm in the middle of writing a novel, I don't read a lot of fiction because I'm trying to focus on my own. But now that I'm, you know, just kind of in this preliminary phase, I'm reading a lot of fiction.
Miriam, it's been a pleasure to have you on the program today. Congratulations on this book. I really enjoyed reading it.
Hey, thanks very much. I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on the show.
The book is called The Flying Troutmans, $32 from Knopf. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plana.